not backing down.
Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, January 31st, 2017. It was a busy day in Washington as Senate hearings into Donald Trump's nominations continue. Betsy DeVos's nomination as Education Secretary came close to not being passed to a full Senate vote. The committee took two votes. The first was 11-11, with Utah Senator Orrin Hatch out of the room, then another vote with him. The vote was 12-11. DeVos comes from a billionaire family which donated millions to members of Congress. She's been involved in causes that prop up private and charter schools. Here's Senator Tammy Baldwin. She's from Wisconsin, very upset about how the vote was handled.
But 11-11 is not a majority. A tie is not a majority of members actually present. To say otherwise in a ruling and then ask your members to stand by that alternative fact is really dismaying. We have to be able to rely on the rules. Our power as senators to represent our constituencies relies on that.
Baldwin went on to voice her opposition to DeVos, saying her no vote is substantive.
Mrs. DeVos has not demonstrated a commitment to public education. My home state of Wisconsin has a long and very proud tradition of public education. It's a guarantee that we wrote into our state's constitution back in 1848. That every child deserved a free public education. Mrs. DeVos' primary experience with education has been a decades-long effort to privatize it. Her record supporting vouchers as well as charter schools that lack adequate accountability and oversight is troubling. I don't believe from our hearing or subsequent questions that Mrs. DeVos supports a robust role for the federal government in ensuring equity in education. Congress originally passed the Elementary and Secondary Education Act in 1965 as a civil rights measure designed to ensure that every student, regardless of zip code or a parent's income, has access to a quality public education. And we continue that very important tradition in this committee when we reauthorized this law with the bipartisan Every Student Succeeds Act, which this next secretary will have to implement. I remain very concerned that Mrs. DeVos, as a vocal proponent of state and local control, will not be the strong voice that we need to hold states accountable for serving all students, particularly those who have been historically left behind. And I'm also concerned by answers she provided to my written questions in which she would not commit to robustly supporting the Department's Office of Civil Rights, or enforcing guidance that protects transgender students from discrimination. Mrs. DeVos has no experience that will allow her to successfully lead America's efforts to make higher education accessible to more Americans. This is an area of immense concern to myself and the people I represent, because there is a student debt crisis in this country. But Mrs. DeVos does not have a clear plan to address it and has even expressed skepticism about whether there should be a federal role. In response to my written questions, as well as Others, she refused to commit to enforcing regulations that help students defrauded by their schools refusing to help people defrauded by their schools. And she refused to commit to opposing cuts to public service loan forgiveness programs. Mr. Chairman, Mrs. DeVos answers to my questions and colleagues' questions in the limited time our committee had her before this committee in hearings as well as our written questions, demonstrate that she is simply not qualified to lead the U.S. Department of Education, and that is why I vote no.
Two prominent Republicans on the committee, Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, expressed skepticism over DeVos. They say they are not sure whether they will vote for her on the Senate floor. New York City education advocate, former public school teacher, and New York City Council member from Queens and chair of the Council's Education Committee, Danny Drum, says he's outraged that Republican committee members voted to confirm DeVos and turn their backs on our children. Drum went on to say that DeVos has made no secret of her contempt for public education, that she sought to undermine it at every turn. Drum says he joins the legions of Americans in calling on the U.S. Senate to reject DeVos and her frightening agenda to privatize our public schools. RefuseFascism.org on the streets of New York City. Last night, Donald Trump dismissed Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, who had served under Loretta Lynch. The firing came after she questioned the constitutionality of Trump's refugee and immigration ban. As protests erupted at airports across the globe and as legal challenges piled up in courthouses, Yates directed agency attorneys not to defend the executive order. She said in a memo on Monday that she was not convinced it was lawful. Trump's order pauses America's entire refugee program for 4 months. It indefinitely bans all those from war-ravaged Syria, and it temporarily freezes immigration from Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. The new AG Trump and his advisors put in place is Dana Bente. He's U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. He was appointed last night. He says the Muslim ban is lawful and the Justice Department will defend it. Meanwhile, federal judges in New York and in several other states have issued orders that temporarily block the government from deporting people with valid visas who arrived after the travel ban took effect. Today, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman joined the lawsuit against President Trump's immigration order originally filed by the American Civil Liberties Union, the Jerome Frank Legal Services Organization at Yale University, the Urban Justice Center, and the National Immigration Law Center. Schneiderman released a statement which said, "As I've made clear, President Trump's executive action is unconstitutional, unlawful, and fundamentally un-American." Schneiderman also said he will press DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and CBP, Customs Border Protection, to provide a full list of those still detained and allow them to have access to legal services. Today, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly hedged on when he knew about Trump's executive order, which bans Muslims, but he said his department would go along with court orders.
No member of the Homeland Security team ignored a court order, nor would they ignore a court order. I've heard these reports. I've asked people to include members of Congress who called me about them and asked them if they could run down some information for me, and of course, We don't have any information, but we would not ignore a court order.
Kelly leaned on Kevin McAleenan at a news conference today. He's acting commissioner of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency.
To make sure everyone understands how the process is working today, lawful permanent residents and special immigrant visa holders are allowed to board their flights foreign and will be processed for a waiver upon arrival. Again, we've done that over 1,000 times so far in this 3 days of the implementation. Secondly, immigrant visa holders and non-immigrant visa holders that are covered, they'll be denied boarding before they board their aircraft, and they'll be referred to the Department of State for further process. Another question that has come up is whether dual nationals are treated differently. Travelers will be assessed at our border based on the passport they present, not any dual national status. So if you're a citizen of the United Kingdom, you present your United Kingdom passport, and the executive order does not apply to you upon arrival. I also want to talk a little bit about refugees. The executive order calls for refugees that were ready to travel where it would cause undue hardship, that they should be considered for waivers. We have done that in concert with our Department of State colleagues. 872 refugees will be arriving this week, and we'll be processing them for waivers through the end of the week, and that's fully coordinated. As Secretary Kelly noted, we are responding immediately to any court orders. We did so quickly on Friday night with the Eastern District of New York order, and those parties that were affected by that order were processed for a waiver and admitted into the United States. Lastly, I just want to tell you that to increase communications and provide additional information to travelers, we are updating on our website. It'll be there as you log in at cbp.gov. A statement about the implementation, FAQs giving information to travelers, the public, and other stakeholders, as well as a link for specific questions affecting individual travelers and a phone number to call. All of that will be on our website.
According to Homeland Security Secretary Kelly, the countries where the ban is in place don't have proper vetting.
Extreme vetting, we're looking at various options right now. We, the interagency, led by, of course, Homeland Security. The countries, there are many countries, seven that we're dealing with right now, that don't have the kind of law enforcement, records keeping, that kind of thing that can convince us that one of their citizens is indeed who that citizen says they are and what their background might be. So there's various additional things we're considering. On the other end, when someone comes in and asks for consideration to get a visa, it might be certainly an accounting of what websites they visit. It might be telephone contact information so that we can see who they're talking to. But again, all of this is under development. But those are the kind of things we're looking at. Social media, we have to be convinced that people that come here, there's a reasonable expectation that we don't know who they are and what they're coming here for and what their backgrounds are. And right now there are a number of countries on the planet that don't have that that kind of records keeping, police work, that kind of thing. And the seven in question right now, for the most part, fall into that category. So we are developing what additional vetting, extreme vetting, might look like, and we will certainly work with countries on this.
And groups that work to settle refugees in the U.S. say the executive order signed by President Trump leaves thousands of refugees in limbo. Andrea Sears reports.
The order, signed late Friday afternoon, halts the resettlement of all refugees in the United States for 120 days and those from Syria until further notice. And it cuts the number that will be resettled this year by more than half. According to Jennifer Syme with the International Rescue Committee, that leaves some 60,000 refugees already in the pipeline wondering if they'll be able to come here or not.
Many of those people have been already approved and are literally just waiting to get on a plane. And they're living in difficult circumstances, either in urban settings where they have very few resources or in refugee camps.
Refugees, immigrants, and even green card holders from seven predominantly Muslim countries who were in transit when the order was signed were detained on arrival and in some cases sent back. The executive order calls for extreme vetting of all applicants for refugee status, but Syme points out that the U.S. vetting process already is the most stringent in the world, taking 18 to 24 months and involving three government agencies, including Homeland Security.
There's many places in the process to catch any discrepancies in the stories or the background of the refugees. So it's already a very, very tight system.
Under the executive order, Syrian refugees will be denied entry to the United States until further notice, regardless of any vetting process. Last year, the U.S. settled just 10,000 Syrians, far fewer than most other Western countries. Syme believes the United States has a moral responsibility to do more.
It is part of our tradition, and this country was founded by refugees and immigrants who came fleeing from all parts of the world, and we're not really living up to our values in our history.
While the executive order was promoted as a way to prevent terrorists from entering the country, a study by the Cato Institute found the likelihood of an American being killed by a terrorist entering the country as a refugee to be 1 in 3.64 billion per year. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Meanwhile, the hearing into Jeff Sessions as Attorney General continued. Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy.
Senator Sessions is not willing even to acknowledge facts that make President Trump uncomfortable. How can we believe that an Attorney General would ever be able to say no to President Trump, as Attorneys General of both parties have been able to do in the past? Senator Sessions' record on civil rights, his lack of independence from President Trump, leave me particularly worried. He'll fail to protect Americans' constitutional right to vote. Nothing is more sacred in our democracy than the right to vote.
Leahy says we need an independent attorney general.
One who is committed to standing up for the constitutional and statutory rights of the disenfranchised and stand up to a president who in these short days has already violated these rights. I don't think that describes Senator Sessions. So for these reasons, and I'll speak longer on the floor, I'm not confident of Senator Sessions being an attorney general for all Americans. And so, Mr. Chairman, I must oppose this nomination. I thank you for having this open day.
Thank you.
No to the ban on refugees. Come on, go out, but you don't need to drag me. I've got a hip replacement. I'm 70 years old, and I can make it out on my own. But no to racism, no to hate, no to Jeff Sessions, no to the ban on refugees.
That's retired Colonel Ann Wright, who was roughly dragged out of the Senate Judiciary Committee today. An article in the Washington Post called Sessions the intellectual godfather of Donald Trump's anti-constitutional ban. This was brought up by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, who took issue with Jeff Sessions, who said he had no role in drafting the executive order on refugees and immigration.
When Senator Sessions came to see me in my office, as he visited most of us, I was heartened by one thing. He didn't come in and tell me that he was the new Jeff Sessions, that he had reinvented himself for this position. He didn't try to do that, and I respect him for that, because we know one another quite well, politically and in some degree personally. So when he makes a statement when asked about the executive orders that he was not involved in the executive orders on refugees and immigration, I have to really question that. Based on what we've already heard from both Senator Feinstein and Senator Leahy, this article in the Washington Post suggests that he was involved, indirectly, but definitely involved. The directives, as these writers said, bore Trump's name, but another man's fingerprints were also on nearly all of them. Jeff Sessions, an Alabama Senate backbencher, in this article's opinion, has become a singular power in Washington. Sessions' ideology, the article says, is driven by a visceral aversion to what he calls soulless globalism, a term used on the extreme right to convey a perceived threat to the United States from free trade, international alliances, and the immigration of non-whites. We know that it was his former senior policy advisor, Steve Miller, his confidant, who was mentored by Senator Sessions, who was credited with authoring these executive orders on refugees and immigrants. We also know that the deputy chief of staff, Rick Dearborn, was formerly Senator Sessions' longtime chief of staff in the Senate. And we know as well, as has been stated, the mastermind behind President Trump's incendiary brand of populism, chief strategist Stephen Bannon, has for years been promoting Senator Sessions on his Breitbart website. It is said that Jared Kushner, in this article, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor, considers Senator Sessions a savant. In an email in response to a request in the Washington Post, Steve Bannon described Sessions as the clearinghouse for policy and philosophy in Trump's administration, saying he and the senator are at the center of Trump's pro-America movement and the global nationalist phenomena. The president has referred to Senator Jeff Sessions as legendary. To suggest that he did not have influence or impact on the issuance of these executive orders is misleading. He had indirect influence at the highest levels.
Meanwhile, Senator Lindsey Graham said he often disagrees with President Trump, but in this instance, he enthusiastically endorses his pick, not the sentiment expressed by Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal.
On citizenship, Senator Sessions has called for abolishing this, a time-honored tradition that dates back to Reconstruction. Birthright citizenship is the distinctly American concept that anyone born on our soil is a citizen of this country. We don't exclude people from citizenship based on nationality of their parents or grandparents. Senator Sessions disagrees, a position that most other Republicans think is extreme. With Senator Sessions as Attorney General, the Trump administration would be encouraged in attempting to deport that person. As Senator Sessions, as Attorney General, that sense of legal conscience would be lacking. On issues of discrimination and equal protection, Senator Sessions has publicly opposed marriage equality, claiming, I quote, that it weakens marriage, end quote, and even tried to eliminate protections for LGBT Americans in the Runaway and Homeless Youth Trafficking Prevention Act. He has repeatedly voted against steps to enhance enforcement against hate crime, violent assaults involving bigotry or bias based on race, religion, or sexual orientation. He even defended President Trump's shocking admission on video of his pattern of engaging in sexual assault. Senator Sessions has said that public individuals may be fairly judged by assessing who supports them. But he is backed by groups with ties to white supremacists. He accepted an award and repeated campaign donations from groups whose founder openly promotes the goal of maintaining a, quote, European-American majority, end quote, in our society.
Democrats question whether the Alabama Republican could be independent of President Donald Trump as the nation's chief law enforcement officer. Sessions was one of Trump's first and strongest supporters. Meanwhile, the vote will be delayed until tomorrow. Code Pink is urging listeners to please call your senators now and demand that they oppose Jeff Sessions. The Capitol switchboard is 202-224-3121. Again, the peace group Code Pink is urging listeners to please call your senator to demand that they oppose Jeff Sessions. The number again is 202-224-3121. And Democratic senators boycotted two nominations today, Steve Mnuchin as Treasury Secretary and Tom Price as head of the Department of Health and Human Services. The Senate did confirm Elaine Chao to serve as Transportation Secretary in the Trump administration. The vote was 93-6. Chao is an experienced Washington hand. She was Labor Secretary under President George W. Bush. She's wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Chao would be a lead actor in pursuing Trump's promise to invest $1 trillion to improve highways, rail service, and other infrastructure projects. In other news, the AFL-CIO is urging the Senate to reject President Trump's pick to lead the Labor Department. Richard Trumka said in a letter to senators that Andrew Puzder's nomination betrays the promise made to working people first. He added that Puzder's record as CEO of CKE Restaurants, Inc. could risk government protections on overtime and workers' safety. He noted that Puzder is opposed to a big hike in the minimum wage, and he could torpedo pay rules on certain federal contracts. Puzder has said the right government policies can produce more jobs and better wages. His confirmation hearing is expected on February 7th. Democrats have widely panned Puzder's nomination in similar terms, but Republicans control the Senate, and there's no sign Puzder's confirmation is imperiled. And the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee backed Montana Representative Ryan Zinke for Interior Secretary and former Texas Governor Rick Perry for Energy Secretary. President Trump's nominees met little resistance in the panel this morning. The committee voted 16-6 for Zinke and 16-7 for Perry. The nominations now go to the full Senate. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, January 31st, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union makes us strong.
When the Union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union makes us strong.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union makes us strong.
They have taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union makes us strong.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the Union makes us strong.